on this episode of Edge of the Web.
But now I think it's just a matter of marketers having to own more of the funnel, and not even the funnel, but you know, the cross-sell, the upsell, the customer success.
Your weekly digital marketing trends with industry trend-setting guests. You're listening and watching Edge of the Web. Winners of Best Podcast from the Content Marketing Institute for 2017. Hear and see more at edgeoftheweb.com. Now, alongside Tom Broadbeck, here's your host, Aaron Sparks.
So thanks for everybody watching our live stream, as well as all of our audio listeners. Welcome back to Edge of the Web. Hey, we're broadcasting from Edge Media Studios in downtown Indianapolis, Indiana. Every week we bring you marketing trends, digital marketing trends, as well as marketing influencers from around the planet. Blessed to be able to have this type of relationship and this type of show that we're able to showcase this information for our listeners. You can check out all of our information over at edgeoftheweb.com. We're powered by Site Strategics, the title sponsor of the show, digital marketing pioneers that focus on agile digital marketing strategy and execution. So if you want to learn more about that, simply search agile marketing strategy. You'll be able to find Site Strategics right there. And just, you know, give us a shout. You can call us at 877-SEO for web or 877-736-4932, as well as send us some information through the website. And we can actually have a free hour consultation to kind of share with you what we do and how we do it, and perhaps even look at some cool actions and tips that we can provide you that you can use right there for your online success. So give us a shout, and we'd be happy to serve you. I'm your host, Aaron Sparks. I'm the CEO of Site Strategics, as well as Edge Media Studios. The reason that we do this show, and if you haven't come across this show before, thanks for jumping on board. The reason we do this is we demystify and kind of debunk, actually, some myths inside of digital marketing. Also kind of break apart some key concepts that really do need to be broken apart, because there's some complexities inside of digital marketing and digital marketing tactics. But we also do it so we can keep our powder dry, educate ourselves, so we can actually bring these type of tactics to our own clients here at Site Strategic. So it's a bit self-serving. I'd like to introduce to you our director of digital media, who's behind the producer's booth today. It's Tom Broadbeck. Sir, how you doing?
Hi, good.
Can you hear me? Pull the mic close. There we go. Hi, how's it going?
It's good, man. Good, man. How's your week been?
It's been good. It's fair week. Fair week's done.
I ate my fair share
of tenderloins and
wheat,
elephant ears. We call them beaver. They have beaver tails there too. But
what's a beaver tail?
It is a thicker elephant ear.
Holy! So it's just more dough.
Just more dough
and more sugar and more cinnamon. And
it's not as big, but it's just thicker.
So it's kind of gummy, or is it?
Yeah. No, I guess it's just more. It's just more dough.
All right, that'll work.
Can't beat
that'll
that.
Work. No, you can't beat that. Now this is Johnson County Fair. Do they actually have turkey legs, smoked turkey legs, or is that just at the state fair?
I didn't see any turkey legs there.
No. That's my favorite.
Lemon shake-ups. There's a steak tips place that I like to go to, where you can get mashed potatoes and onions and mushrooms and steak, all gravy, all mixed together.
Okay, you realize we're doing this at lunchtime today.
Yeah, I know. I'm sorry.
And you already had lunch.
I ate lunch early because I knew this was happening.
Our guest, who is nowhere near Johnson County right now, we got Jason Miller, who's head of content and social at EMEA. Jason, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. Coming to you from LinkedIn London office here in the EMEA region. So good to be here.
Well, thanks for joining us, Jason. Now, did that make you hungry as well?
It's dinner time here. It's 5 o'clock in London, and a little bit.
But, he's hitting us with both, man. I mean, go ahead.
I am originally from the Midwest, so. I've been to my fair share of county fairs, and some of my favorite bands from the 80s are making the rounds of those county fairs all summer long.
It's so, Def Leppard season, isn't it?
I think it's more down around the Great White and Slaughter.
Ooh, Def Leppard, a little bit of White Snake, and we're all good. just to let our audience know, EMEA, tell us about that. This is you're with LinkedIn, but what is EMEA?
Oh, so EMEA is just the region that I work in. So
okay.
It's UK, Ireland, Spain, France, Germany. That's the area that I focus on. So I gave up my team, left San Francisco a little while or a couple couple of years ago, and came over here to focus on becoming a true, you know, global marketer in a sense, and focus on the different nuances between the different regions over here. So that's my mission, and I just crossed 2 years, and I tell you what, I didn't realize it was going to be on video. I'm like in between, like growing my hair out and my beard, and I'm wearing my Ben Harper shirt, and it's like, I tell you what, it is literally, it's almost 100 degrees outside in London.
Wow.
Wow. Wait a minute.
In London.
We don't ever have weather like this. So for the past 3 weeks, it's been almost between 90, 96, 97. And it's, I mean, it's unbearable.
Oh, I bet.
Like no one has AC here because it's like in San Francisco. You never need it, but,
yeah.
How are the Brits faring there? Because, you know, I as we talked off prior to the show, I got half my family in England, and I mean they're 70s tops. I mean they, you know, maybe in the top 80s in summertime, but that is excruciating to them, and they're all fair skin.
I will tell you this: I'm like Marilyn Manson in the sun. I don't agree with it at all, so I don't really go out on it too much. But I will tell you this. There was an article in the BBC yesterday morning about the Tube, which is obviously our subway, how I get to work every morning. And it said that it was 5 degrees hotter than what it's legal to transport cattle in, right? So if that tells you, if that tells you anything, man, it is blistering hot here. And there's no end in sight. And I've never seen anything like it before.
Wow. So, I mean, literally, that's too darn funny, man. So they're transporting everybody in the Tube and it's breaking the rules that you'd even transport cattle in. That's funny. Yeah,
you just move the whole time on the subway?
Wow.
You never see shorts in the LinkedIn London office unless you're coming back from Cannes or if it's 96 degrees outside. That's it.
Oi. Oh, it's hot over there. What's our temperature? Our temperature is running around 77 degrees, which
is... Yeah, we're a little cooler next few days.
That's never... I mean, we're cooler than London right now. And yeah, that's
rarely happened.
I think the stars are aligning. Well, Jason, we certainly would love for you to jump in and talk about some of the news of today. Are you ready to get going with us?
Absolutely. Let's just dive in.
All right. So let's take you through the latest digital marketing news.
I was very excited to start my reportings.
This week's trending topics.
Tom, I actually think you slipped in a dad joke over there, and we kind of glossed that. But I mean, that was an awesome dad joke. The moving on the Tube.
Oh.
Yeah.
No, I was referencing more. I remember going to a Purdue University football game, which is a big farming agriculture school, and they are shuffling crowds through this tight little tunnel at this little walkway thing. And so all the ag people were mooing like their cows that's being funny. Pushed into a pen or something. So that's kind of.
Got it.
That's where my mind went. But if you want to make the dad joke, moving, that works too.
Yeah, I mean, I'm expecting more and more dad jokes coming from you. I mean, yeah, you have a 3-year-old now, right?
She's not quite almost two.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Not quite two.
Yeah. All right. Grow that quickly.
All right, well, jumping into it. Hey, from Search Engine Journal, from Matt Southern, there's a reminder here. Chrome browser to display not secure warnings for HTTP sites on July 24th. That is today.
Yep, that's today. So I thought it'd be relevant if you don't have your site HTTPS. It will start showing here's what it will look like. This not secure right there in the middle of the screen will be appearing in your address bar for your website if you don't have a secure certificate on your site.
Right. Now, we were kind of a bit leery. We were getting these alerts about HTTPS earlier on, about a month and a half ago, thinking that the entire page would be prevented from loading with a secure announcement. That wasn't the case.
No.
They're just...
in the address bar.
They're graphically showing that. But there's also... I mean, aren't they also putting into the SERP results, at least on the mobile side, some secure icons, or is that not happening?
I don't know. I haven't heard that, but that I miss things, so that could be possible, but I haven't not heard that.
Well, obviously, Google is wanting everyone to be secure, and we're seeing more and more. You've got to get into alignment with what Google is asking for, and you should be compliant with. That comes with some mixed content. If you lock down your site, you got to pay attention to how your site's built because you can throw up that error in the padlock as well. But from a secure standpoint, I mean, Jason, I mean, do you find that beneficial whenever you're going through sites and be able to see a secure environment?
You know, to be honest with you, it's something I don't really pay attention to. I think it's a good thing. I read that article and you know, a little bit surprised. from a content marketer myself when I read the article, because it seemed like they reported the news, but they didn't really talk about the implications or what it meant beyond reporting it. And I thought that was interesting because I love search engine journal. They usually go pretty in depth on these things. So I'm not really something I pay attention to. But then again, not really in my my realm of expertise.
No worries. Well, I mean, part of Google's pursuit is to make sure that you have an encrypted, secure environment, especially whenever you're submitting information. They're trying to protect their consumers, their customers, which is the online searcher, and they're insisting pretty heavy-handedly that you dial this in. So the HTTP does not protect communication. So any information provided to a non-secure site could be potentially stolen or used for malicious purposes. And in the area of identity theft, I mean, you're providing confidence to your consumers just by locking the site down.
Sure, yeah. And I remember another example that Google's provided in the past is one of the Google engineers was traveling and was at a hotel and came across a non-secure website, and the hotel was putting pop-up ads that he was staying in was putting pop-up ads over that website. And if it was a secure site, that wouldn't allow that to happen.
Yeah, yeah.
So another reason why you would want to have a secure certificate.
Yep, absolutely, absolutely. Well, over in search engine land from Adam Dorfman, he writes a blog article up here, Apple Maps to take a step in the right direction. Keep your business listings on Google Maps updated, says contributor Adam Dorfman, and don't overlook doing the same on Apple Maps. Here's a look at the new improved Apple Maps and its features. So as you scroll down, you'll be able to see a few things here. There was a comment made from Tim Cook at Apple. We strive to make world-class products that deliver the best experience possible to our customers. With the launch of our new Maps last week, we fell short on this commitment. We are extremely sorry for the frustration that this caused our customers, and we're doing everything we can to make Maps better. Now, that was during the underwhelming rollout in 2012, and Apple has disclosed to TechCrunch that they're actually rebuilding Apple Maps from the ground up now. This entails, among other things, Apple's taking control of the data that powers Apple Maps instead of relying on third parties. So a number of the different changes here, they've actually improved. Instead of relying on third-party data, it actually made Apple too vulnerable to somebody else's quality control issues. So now they're taking a big stab at cutting into Google Maps with the existing Apple Maps interface. They're actually focusing on making the map more functional. For example, making addresses more accurate, which is about darn time. Actually, I found myself so many times trying to figure out where in the world did Apple Maps take me. Google Maps is far superior as it is, and they're doing a better job spotting new construction, giving travelers pinpointed instructions on locations, to a location's front door, using human-edited, accurate 3D renderings of places, and identifying commonly walked but previously unmapped public areas. How about that?
There you go.
That was a gauntlet. So are you a Google Maps or an Apple Maps fan, Jason?
You know, it's interesting that you asked that. I'm guessing that that Apple Maps is just laying the foundation for their big VR, AR play, right?
Yep.
I would guess. But at the same time, I am a Mac user, but I am a Android phone. So I probably should take those two together. I'm an S9 Plus guy. I love the Samsung phones. Mm-hmm. But for my, you know, photography and video, I had to switch to a Mac. I couldn't find a laptop that could power through what I'm doing. So, I probably don't match up together, but that's the way I like to roll.
That was a Freudian slip there. You realize that he said he didn't map up.
I was
going to
say map it up. Yeah.
Some of the comparisons there: Apple Map changes that are in progress, the ability to guide users to the front door of locations, spotting road construction. That, I mean, for downtown Indianapolis, for that matter, I mean, Apple's has fallen short because it just doesn't understand what the heck's going on 465 right now, or 65. More information about walkable spaces, more information about local and regional landmarks, and accurate 3D renderings. Meanwhile, Google Maps changes that are in progress, augmented reality for wayfinding, just like Jason was talking about, highly personalized recommendations, social features such as group planning, context-based directions by landmark and other POIs. You can see how far Google is, and Apple is still trying to figure itself out, right? No offense, Apple, but come on. Get with the times.
Yeah, I remember watching the Google, is it the Google I.O. or Google whatever big thing that they have.
Yeah.
And they're showing off some of the new features with the Google Maps, and that's pretty cool.
Yeah. And what was it? It was they also had that AR augmented reality where as they were interacting, yeah, that's the picture right there. You could actually see different
as you're walking down the street, and it'll tell you which way to go. And
yep. Too cool. I think Apple's got a far way to go on that one. From last article here from Search Engine Journal from Matt Southern, YouTube shows searchable hashtags above videos. Tom, talk to us about this. What's going on here?
Yeah, so I hadn't seen it in person yet, but apparently what's going to start happening is right here you can see in the middle of the screen, some hashtags will start appearing above your video title. So it could be a good way to... if you have your own brand, hashtag, that sort of thing that you can put in with a video or any trending topics, stories, that sort of thing. So it could be a good, nice little feature for users to take advantage of, and as well as producers.
You can also put that in the video title.
Correct.
Directly. I honestly never search hashtags inside of YouTube. I didn't even know that was...
I didn't know you could. I don't know if that's just something that they're going to start doing, and this is the first step.
It says here creators have to adhere to YouTube's hashtag use policies. This involves refraining from using hashtags to promote harassment or hate speech, or using hashtags to direct people to misleading content. Being a video file, Jason, what do you think about YouTube rolling out the hashtag world?
I have not seen this either. I didn't even know you could use hashtags on YouTube, but interesting to me. I think if you have a small campaign that you want to keep tabs on, or if you're looking for a very video topic. And again, if I'm looking for something very specific around 80s hair metal, which I watch quite a bit, the algorithm doesn't always do the best job of sorting out my journey down the rabbit hole of clicking through YouTube and suggestions. So I welcome it. I'm not sure it's going to be a revolutionary change by any means, but anything they can do to help me find what I'm looking for and keep me, finding relevant content, I'm all for.
Yeah. Interesting enough is that you see the hashtags. Go back to that screen real quick, if you would, Tom. You see it right above the YouTube video in a pretty small lineup of content. I think just the real estate alone prevents a huge amount of spam. You know, I mean, just jamming hashtags in there. Aesthetically, you're probably going to be really wanting to use sparse tags as opposed to 15 hashtags above your title. God, if they allow that to go through and just put as many as you want, man, YouTube's just going to get ugly.
Yeah, and they'll shut that down if it gets too spammy. So,
no, I'd agree. All right. Well, you know what? What's not spammy is our newsletter. Sign up for our newsletter on a regular basis. Well, actually, you only have to sign up once. You don't have to keep on signing up. That would be weird. Go ahead and text to the number 22828, the word Edge Talk, and you can sign up right there on your smartphone. Please don't do it while you're driving. Or you can go straight over to edgeofthewebradio.com and sign up right there. We're sending out regular information each and every week about the show that's upcoming, as well as who we talked to last week, and some insights into the news that we talked about, as well as possibly a nugget of gold from an SEO tip or a social media tip and the like. So sign up there. We're always... welcoming new audiences to our newsletter, and give us some feedback. Let us know how we're doing on that front, and we'll certainly want to bring you some more VIP insider information from the Edge. So with that, forgive the gratuitous plug there, Jason. You want to check out all the trending topics over at edgeofthewebradio.com, but first and most importantly, let's deep dive with today's featured guest.
Now it's time for Edge of the Web featured interview with Jason Miller, head of content and social media marketing at LinkedIn.
I actually came across Forrest in that. I don't think I've ever said that online.
When I was in Colorado, they had t-shirts that said, "May the Forrest be with you."
Ooh. There you go. There you go. I appreciate the pun. Well, Jason, welcome to the show. We certainly appreciate your time today, especially coming from across the pond. Let me introduce our users, our listeners, to Jason. Jason, the head of content and social media marketing for LinkedIn for Europe, the Middle East, and Africa, and helps to ensure LinkedIn's global content that delivers results for people and businesses on the LinkedIn platform. Jason's also the finalist this year on Content Marketer of the Year Award from Content Marketing Awards. So congratulations there.
Thank you. Super excited. I will be making a trip to Content Marketing World. I've been several times, but never as a leader in this category. So I'm looking forward to it.
And I assume you've been to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Oh, so many times, times. But you know, I don't really geek out on the big stuff. There's a handwritten handwritten lyrics to Level Tear Us Apart from Joy Division, like hidden in the back. It's probably like one of the coolest things in there. Some really cool like Kurt Cobain stuff. And anyway, yeah, so I look for the really sort of oddball stuff in there, but love it. And the opening night party is always there, so I look forward to it.
Cool.
We are very happy. I mean, that Kiss actually made it to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. That was last year, was it not?
That is true, yes.
Oh. So, I mean, they finally made it. Boy, I mean, that redeemed the Hall of Fame for me, I got to say. Jason, we kind of did the official introduction. Why don't you give us your backstory of how you came to be at LinkedIn, as well as how you came to be over there?
So, sure. So I have a kind of a strange journey getting here. I started in the music business. I used to do artist development for Sony Music, and it was the only job I ever had out of college. And so it was a pretty cool job because around 98, 99, there was really no MP3. There was no Spotify. Napster was just sort of would start to come on board a couple years later, I think, and slaughter the industry. But I did 12 years there, and I watched the music industry sort of fight digital instead of embracing it. By the time they decided to embrace it, the genie was out of the bottle, and there's no going back. So I just got fed up. I had a bunch of ideas, no one was listening to me. So in 2009, I quit. I had to go back to school and sort of reinvent myself. Took as many courses as I could on SEM and demand gen and research and social media, everything I possibly could learn, email marketing, etc. Mm-hmm. And then I had to sort of reinvent myself and start over again. It sucked. It wasn't very easy at all. But got my foot in the door at a place called Market Tools, where I was the social media manager for an online survey platform called Zoomerang. Really, really exciting times for me. And they gave me a shot, and I think I went into the interview and said I was a social media expert or something. I guess everyone said that around 2009. And did that for about a year and a half. Then Marketo called, and I went over there and ran social, global content and social for Marketo. And then LinkedIn called me about a gig that they had on LinkedIn Marketing Solutions. And I decided to move over there. And I've been there. I've been here. Well, I actually was over there for 3 years out of San Francisco. Mm-hmm. And then just wanted to expand my role globally and as I mentioned earlier, sort of learn the different nuances between the different regions and become a true global marketer. I think the only way you can do that is to immerse yourself in the market. So I packed up my family, moved over here, and I've been here for 2 years now. So 5 years at LinkedIn, two here in EMEA, and that's my story.
Very cool, very cool. And can't gloss over Marketo. How long were you with that group?
2 years at Marketo, so pre-IPO. Maria Pergolino, I think I was employee like 126. Mm-hmm. Maria Pergolino hired me. She taught me almost everything I know about demand gen, market automation, set me up, love her to death. Mm-hmm. And then she got a CMO of Anaplan. And I worked directly for John Miller, who was a co-founder of Marketo. John has a degree in physics and is a marketer. So you can imagine, like, he doesn't mess around with measurement. But it was cool because, I mean, it was cool working. It was like getting a PhD in digital marketing because Marketo was on the bleeding edge of everything and pushing the boundaries of what that product could do.
Yep.
There's no question on whether or not you can measure your digital marketing, your content marketing. You can measure everything almost. I mean, as Rand Fishkin famously says, there's a serendipitous element of marketing that you should never try to measure. But with Marketo, you can get pretty damn close to getting everything, or any marketing automation platform for that matter.
Oh, today it's the heyday of the convergence of marketing to analytics, and it's great to be able to see these platforms, and it's certainly great to be able to see LinkedIn kind of resurrecting itself, so to speak, from years ago, and it's really turning into such a great marketing platform.
Oh man, it's been a hell of a ride. 5 years. I remember the week I started was the week that we launched sponsored content, which is or sponsored updates, which is now sponsored content. But mm-hmm. The week I started on July 15th of 2013, which was my birthday is on July 15th. That's the only reason I remember that date. But we launched sponsored content, sponsored updates, it was called at the time, the week I started. And I remember the first piece of content I created, and it was absolutely terrible. That is now deleted and long gone.
Now, that's a great journey, especially from the Marketo into the LinkedIn space. You regularly see individuals that kind of stay, if they're in those type of media platforms, they kind of stay in those spaces. But being able to garner such information from a marketing automation tool set, I'm sure you certainly guided LinkedIn with some good insights of what marketers are really looking for, right?
Well, I brought over my expertise, everything I learned at Marketo from John and Maria. And I'd like to think that, you know, John and Maria were absolutely leaders in the space. And I just took their playbook, everything I learned, put my own spin on it, brought it over to LinkedIn, and won the Transformation Award the first year I was here for transforming the way they do content marketing, and kind of expanded beyond that. So it's interesting because I've always been sort of what I call a hybrid marketer, which is a marketer who's not an expert in any one thing. Because I think if you're today's space, if you're an expert in any one thing, I think you're easily disposable. So that's why I love the show, because you guys do a well-rounded approach to all the marketing disciplines, technical, non-technical, inspirational, creative, everything, bringing it together. And I think, if you're going to be a marketing leader, there's not enough conversation around pulling these things together. It's just been really interesting for me to bring strategy and bring all these disciplines in together, but learn as much as I can about them, but not go too deep in any one, but knowing how they all fit together into this true sort of integrated marketing experience approach. And I think that's where we're all headed. Yep. And it's interesting to me though, to see some people just still, claim to be an expert in any one thing. And I think there's certainly a space for that, but if you want to be a leader in the marketing space, I think you got to be a little bit more well-rounded and in the different disciplines.
Amen. And thank you for the compliment. I appreciate that. We're seeing more and more marketers that can really understand the T concept of marketing, is that you need to be deep in your channel, but you have to understand how your services, your skill sets affect other disciplines in the digital marketing space. And on top of it, If you close yourself off, you're never going to be able to get an influx of new ideas from somebody. If you're in social and you're not learning from SEO, right? There's so many places where social and SEO converge that can help spawn even greater ideas of content, internal content marketing as well as external. If you stay in your lane and don't try out and don't start getting some experience from other marketers, you're selling yourself short. But more importantly, you're just putting blinders on to the entire digital marketing experience and being able to understand different techniques and how it would actually affect your own skill set, right?
Exactly. I mean, if you're a content marketer and you don't understand how demand generation works, or how market automation works, or how lead generation, lead scoring, lead nurturing, all these things tie together, how the web interprets your content to be found, how to optimize for results, how PR, influencer, analyst relations are all kind of, merging together, then I think you're in trouble. I keep looking down like I have notes, but I swear I don't.
I was wondering if you came prepared on this one.
I have some coffee with some oat milk. This is a new thing in London, oat milk. I don't know what the hell milk is.
That's the plant milk, isn't it?
I was looking for regular milk. All I could find was oat milk. It's not terrible. I don't hate it.
Plant milk showed up in my refrigerator this weekend. I have no idea. And I've got four kids.
I said plant milk.
It's
plant
milk.
Almond milk.
No. It's plant milk. And they also had chocolate plant milk. And the kids are all just kind of eyeballing the fridge going, what is that? But
I didn't mean to derail that.
No, no, no. I saw your squirrel and I tracked it down. Quickly, we want to reference our sponsor before we get into everything that you started to unpack real quick. Site Strategics is actually proud to be the title sponsor of Edge of the Web Radio, and we certainly want to give a special offer to our listeners. We provide digital marketing strategies on a regular basis, and we are constantly focused on the return on investment for the strategy that we roll out from our clients. So would you like to know your digital marketing strategy and what the return on investment is? And why not have a second opinion to check out how your investment's paying off? We're actually offering a 30% off discount off of our digital marketing ROI report. You can actually learn your strengths, weaknesses, and threats. We cover all the different channels in SEO, content, social media, and search engine marketing, while allowing the Site Strategics production team to be able to get a full insight into operation, opportunity, and growth. So check out that offer over there. You can go over to edgeoftheweberadio.com/ROI. There's no obligation. Just submit your information over to us, and we'll schedule up a call and see whether or not this report's a good fit for what you're doing internally or externally with another agency. All right, there's the final gratuitous plug. Jason, I appreciate your indulgence there. Demand generation. This is what we really wanted to talk about on the show today. Your latest post that you posted out there, it was titled, "Are You Ready for the Demand Generation 2020? Okay, it had a great breakdown of what to expect in a couple years. But to start off the article, you actually did a great job introducing the concept. But can you define to our audience what is demand generation and how it is different than lead generation?
So, yeah, it's really interesting to me because over the past, you know, 5 or 6 years for me, it's been demand generation and lead generation have kind of been part of the same. They've been interchangeable, and they certainly shouldn't be. So demand gen is the bigger picture, the function. Demand gen is simply creating demand for a product, right? Now lead generation is actually collecting specific information from people to turn that into a sales accepted lead, or to put it into your system, a score, and then put it into a nurture track. Mm-hmm. But it's interesting because I think you hear people call themselves demand gen marketers, and especially in B2B, and they start to interchange the two words together, B2B or demand gen and lead generation. To, if you really look at it, lead generation is technically, you know, more specific to B2B, of course, but demand gen is the bigger picture for everyone. I mean, B2C, B2B, B2C, whichever.
Okay. Well, I mean, how has demand generation changed over the last few years? Because this is a relatively new concept, although it's more of like a term that we finally have that answers a lot of what we've been doing as marketers, and lead generation is a factor of that. But how has demand generation evolved, and can you give us some of the milestones that have been able to be accomplished?
Yeah, I'd say that the biggest thing is, you know, the way that obviously, the classic stats from Forrester that the buyers are now in control of their journey, and they're, mm-hmm. you know, these stats blow me away. It's like one day it's 70, they're 75% through the buyer's journey. The next day they're 98% of the way through the buyer's journey. I don't think anyone really has a good stat. Let's just say they're significantly through the buyer's journey before they're ready to talk to anybody. I think we all know that. But furthermore, sales and marketing alignment, something we still struggle with as marketers, but we still can't figure that out. We've been talking about this for over a decade now. why is it such a constant pain?
Because they hate each other. That's why.
That's interesting to me. I mean, I like the sales team. I play in a band here with the sales team. We're called LinkedIn Park. So
oh, that's sweet.
We're bonding, but we bond over things, and it's just a matter of trust. I mean, do they trust me that I have their best interest in mind to bring them, you know, to tell the story of the marketer on LinkedIn and enable them to sell our products and you know, be educated on what's going on with the trends? Anyway, I don't want to get down that rabbit hole there. But the biggest thing I think, and the reason I call it demand gen 2020, because I'm not a big fan of the folks who look so far into the future that it's not helpful. I think, you know, talking about demand gen 2-3 years out is really interesting because we can start sort of shift and get our head or get, you know, a little bit ahead of the curve there. And then the other thing is it just drives me crazy that everyone gets so concerned with the sexiness and the coolness of the future. And it's like, we got so much work to do with the technology that we have in front of us right now. Most of us don't even have a CRM talking to a marketing automation. We don't even have our, you know, what a lead looks like agreed with the sales team. I mean, all kinds of them. But the bigger thing, I think, and the biggest opportunity is the fact that marketers need to own more of the funnel. I mean, it used to be, demand gen used to be, oh, I'm a marketer, I'm just going to just get as many inquiries, as many names, as many leads as I possibly can, right?
Right.
Into the top of the funnel, and then pass them on to sales. And then sales gets angry because they're not qualified. So then we went through, you know, we started lead nurturing, lead scoring, this whole revenue cycle analytics, which was something we did at Marketo. Mm-hmm. But now I think it's just a matter of marketers having to own more of the funnel. And not even the funnel, but, you know, the cross-sell, the upsell, the customer success. The other thing is interesting to me is I see a lot of teams, especially marketing teams, and they seem to focus on hiring customer success marketers really late in the game.
Hmm.
So it's sort of this growth mindset, right? I just need leads. I need to grow the business. I need to grow as fast as I possibly can. I'm not concerned with anything except for selling products and growing revenue. And then, you know, what happens when you get this whole, you know, growing list of customers, mm-hmm. and they're not being served properly. So anyway, but I think the biggest thing about the article is, what does it look like in 2020? I think it's marketers owning more of the funnel, mm-hmm. taking, rolling up their sleeves and owning more of that funnel of the conversation. I think it's talking about how we can leverage, you know, artificial intelligence for some quick wins. I'm not talking about like having a you know, Watson run your marketing campaign from start to finish, but how can you use, there's plenty of AI platforms out that can help you expand your audience via targeting, segment better, you know, optimize your conversion rates and your bidding strategies. So we have a lot to do as marketers. And I hate to see us get so concerned or worried about the shiny object in the room instead of actually, so just getting to the core of delivering something that's valuable and an interesting campaign, and not trying to growth hack our way into a million views and going viral all the time.
There it is.
I see these posts all the time, and it blows my mind. It's like, oh, I got 2 million views on my posts. I'm like, you're an entrepreneur. You're a single person. Even if your conversion rate is 1%, what could you possibly do with those leads? How could you even follow up with them? So it's just, I always say, don't let your ego hijack your content strategy. And I see a lot of people, all they want is views and views, and they want to go viral. And I think that's the worst possible thing you could ever do, at least in the world of B2B.
Yeah. That was a good kind of breakdown and a somewhat politically correct, traipsing around the edges of one thing that is very, very important that you're touching upon, but really not pointing out directly. It's the accountability of marketers, and you're saying ownership, but they've got to be accountable for all the different stages in that funnel. They got to be mature marketers, not just looking for that shiny object like you're talking about, but literally know that they have a responsibility into all these different stages and all the individual pieces of the content that help move that buyer along the assembly line, right?
Yeah, I think there's parts of your job as a marketer where it's not always fun and sexy, right? Mm-hmm. But I think everyone gets excited with the visibility and the fact that, yeah, you can get, you know, you can get a viral hit every once in a while. Is it scalable? Absolutely not. But I think once you get that taste, once you get that hit, it's like a spike of dopamine, and you want to go back and capture it again. I think all marketers are guilty of that sure. big one successful campaign. It brings me back to and there was a conference in San Francisco, probably six, seven years ago. And I don't even know what the guy's name was, but it was the agency who came up with the Old Spice. And they were up there talking about that and how you know, viral it went. And it was like, well, obviously one of the coolest campaigns of all time, right? Hands
sure,
down.
Absolutely.
But I remember the guy was a little bit like kind of standoffish, like, yeah, this is the coolest campaign ever. And then he said, any questions? And somebody raised their hand and they said, yeah, how come you haven't done it again? Like, how come you haven't? And I thought, oh, man, it's tough a reality. And the guy literally walked off the stage.
No way.
Yeah. And I don't think he had an answer. But it's like, I think you see this all the time, though, these big viral campaigns. It's like a one-hit wonder. It's like in the 80s. With you know, I don't want to call anybody out specifically, but you know, you have a one hit wonder, and it's called One Hit. I wonder what happened to that band. You could say the same about a lot of campaigns, and there's a lot of money behind those. But I think you know, if you just step back and figure out what am I trying to do, again, don't let your ego hijack your conscious strategy. It's not a game of numbers. It's a game of relevance. It's a game of adding value and being helpful. And doing cool stuff, man. If you just take a step back and focus and yep. slow down and start leveraging the technologies in front of you instead of chasing everything that everyone else is thinking is the flavor of the week, I think you'll be a much better marketer and you'll be much more successful.
And you'll have the discipline to be able to do the repetition, everything, you've got the luck of the draw factors, but if you have a discipline of actually executing your marketing strategies over and over again, you're going to be able to have more predictability of success as opposed to, you know, just chasing your tail or chasing the trending topic of the day. Hey, from a demand gen standpoint, metrics on demand gen are a little bit different than lead generation statistics and metrics in the fact that demand gen is actually focused on focusing on awareness and driving interest on a company's offerings, products, and services, right?
Yeah.
So go ahead.
I was waiting for you to finish.
No, I'm sorry.
I mean, again, I think it's you know, demand generation, if you look at it holistically, is a bigger picture of driving demand, driving traffic, you know, the health of your website, what's the visits going up and going down, organic versus paid, you know, what's the referral traffic look like, you know, what keywords are you ranking for, branded, non-branded, et cetera, I mean, I think all those bleed over into lead generation as well, mm-hmm. in a sense of, but the metrics are far different because, you know, as a lead generation marketer, you're looking for qualified leads. You're looking for people, you're looking to attract people to your website that fit, and I don't want to say persona because I'm not a huge fan of persona, but fit, you know, what your buyer looks like. And, you know, that becomes an inquiry to a marketing qualified lead, to a sales qualified or a sales qualified opportunity. You know, and hopefully closes down to revenue. But two different metrics, two different strategies. But what can one learn from the other? Lots of things. I think it's a matter of whatever your goal is. You know, my team has shifted from lead generation, specifically around driving marketing qualified leads for the sales team, mm-hmm. to moving towards a self-serve model. Even though I'm still B2B, my job has shifted from driving to going to leads to actually getting people to go to the LinkedIn platform, campaign manager, sign up, start a campaign and start advertising.
I want to ask you one question out of, I mean, you're everything you're saying. I mean, there's so many different points I want to unpack.
Yeah. Can I want to jump in?
Yeah, you said absolutely.
Something that's not early about demand gen, but you said you weren't a big fan of personas.
Yeah, that's exactly okay. Where I was going. Yeah.
So kind of break that down for me if you could.
Yeah, so I think, I will tell you this. I think there's a time and a place for personas, but I think the people they start off with personas. And when you start off with a persona, I think it ends up living in a PowerPoint presentation that you present to the C-suites. And it never gets out of that. It never gets locked. It never gets mapped back to a customer journey.
Got it.
So, and I will tell you this as well. I mean, I know a lot of the leading edge marketing company, the usual suspects, are not using personas, even though they recommend using personas. I'm not a huge fan of them because I like to start with, and I would hope you guys would agree, but you start with the keyword research and find the conversations that are taking place.
Right.
How do you map your content back? Why build a persona when you can actually start answering questions right away with your content, get a little traction, and then find out what that customer journey looks like, then build a persona and map it back to it. Hmm. But I think everyone thinks that personas are going to save everything you do. And I think you start off building a persona with actually, you know, the keyword research would build into it. The customer journey would build into it. The interview process with your customers, with your prospects and, qualitative and quantitative, that would play into it as well. So I don't think you start with a persona. I think a lot of people who claim they use personas in marketing and a lot of the usual suspects, I don't think they use them at all.
It's almost like it's a bit of a safe harbor creating all these personas and takes a bit of time just building all that out, and it's more, you know, aesthetic treatment for the C levels like you're talking about, as opposed to intent driven. You're absolutely right. Jumping right into keyword research and opening up a larger vantage point of not just core terms, but permutations and these type of intent oriented type of keyword research exercises. That gets you right into the battle right there of what people are looking for immediately.
You can literally why would you not want to understand what conversation is happening, what conversation you want to get into? And I'm not talking about social listening, because I think social listening doesn't capture the whole picture.
Mm-hmm.
You look at and everyone kind of discounts like, oh, keywords are going away. It's not the keywords that are going away. It's just you need to be a little bit more clever with the way you leverage those keywords to branch them out into topics. So it's an interesting time to be a content marketer. I talk about this a lot, too, which I think is fascinating, because when I first started as a content marketer, the SEO folks, it used to be sort of like a good old boys club where they were like the elitists, right? And and they wouldn't talk to anybody because there was a very specific discipline and it was very technical. And
it's kind of like the giant AV club, man.
Well, they didn't like to talk to the arts and crafts department, which is what you know, 10 years ago, whatever. But it's funny because the more conferences I started to go to, and I was like, I used to be at, you know, I used to blog like every single day and take every guest blogging opportunity I could. I had, you know, was building my name and my reputation, but I was learning at the same time. But every conference I went to, you'd start to see the SEO folks start to talk more about content strategy, as the search engines would make all of our jobs easier by just saying, stop keyword stuffing, stop black hat, SEO tactics, and just start creating better, start writing better, start being more interesting. Right.
And useful.
Yeah. And then so I started to see these SEO elitists start to talk about content strategy. And then you start to see the content strategists talk about SEO strategy. And it just started coming together. Now you can't separate the two, period. They have to be one conversation. So that's been a really interesting trend. Where is that heading from here? Again, I think just making us all better marketers, because it's easier to focus on, you know, the content itself and just being interesting. And if you're not a good writer, you're doomed, right? Mm. So that's the first thing. So yeah, I could go on for quite a while about that. But the other thing that's interesting is, you know, creativity. And I hate to throw around these buzzwords like authenticity and transparency and stuff like that, just because I think they're abused in thought leadership. I just think they're but
you're about to say guru too, and you're just going to hit the trifecta there, man.
Gurus, ninjas, whatever. I mean, you guys know what I'm talking about.
Yep.
Yeah, the world certainly has enough thought leaders, but not enough thought leadership collectively, I would say. But I it's interesting to me that big data kind of took over for a while and then put creativity sort of in a corner, right? Like nobody puts creativity in a corner. But you know, and now creativity is having a comeback, because it's like there's so much data out there that I think we kind of gave up on it. We're going to wait for AI to sort of sift through it for us and give us better insights. But now we're back to being like creative is like the cool thing. And I like that. I've always been a creative guy. And you know, I try to tie my passions together with photography and music. But yeah, it's interesting to see creativity making a comeback. And I think branding is terribly underrated. I think branding is going to make a comeback as well. Like Branding Strikes Back. I think that's going to be our next
game. Amen. I mean, Google being the great equalizer, forcing the geeks to you know, to be in the same room with the cool kids. The fact of the matter is that the SEOs of the world, the analytics, the analysis driven metric people, right? They have to tap into their own creativity, and they got to realize that the channel to get there are the other side of the equation, the marketing folk. And on top of that, the marketers literally need to appreciate the metric side of things a good deal better than they have been, because for the most part they're sloppy and lazy. They don't want to be able to pull in and actually analyze and measure what they're doing, so they can actually steer with the scientific model, right? Boy, did I just insult everybody in the room? Jeez.
I never want to discount. You know, I'm a huge fan of the SEO space, and the technical ability of SEO that goes into the website itself. You know, that's something that I don't really deal with. But the fact of, you know, keyword research, gap analysis, mapping my content back to and measuring what that looks like is an impactful strategy for driving traffic and owning conversations. that's something that's very well in the grasp of a content marketer and should be. Now, the technical aspects, of course, we absolutely need that. And the two need to be mapped together. And it's just, it frustrates me to see the two. It's, you know, again, it's the disciplines not talking to one another. It's PR not talking to social. Mm-hmm. It's SEO not talking to content. It's demand gen / market automation acquisition not talking to content. And everyone trying to be their own viral sensation, viral hit, and viral voice and talking head videos. So, yeah, there's a lot on my mind
today. Yeah, I see that. I see that. I mean, it's almost like we're unpacking a therapy session here. No, I mean, you're absolutely right, man. Is Jason? Is that it's a challenge to get everybody working together, but at the same time, I think getting to it, there needs to be this general commonplace piece of music that they can all work from, and it's got to be able to speak to everybody's respective skills, right? And that's where these automation tools, these marketing analysis tools, really start taking center stage, because we can all participate and be able to get that type of feedback that will help us improve whatever the respective content or whatever the respective production that we're bringing to the table is. Yeah, so, I mean,
it is a production. So I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, you're fine.
There's a part in this keynote that I used to do quite a bit, and I was at a KISS concert and I was photographing KISS. And I remember they come right up to you, and Gene and Paul, and they're literally like, they love the photographers. And it's so cool because they'll look directly in your lens. And it's almost like Paul says, "Did you get the photo?" I'm like, "I got it. Can you send Gene over? I'm ready for Gene." And then Gene comes over with his giant boots. But I remember I just kind of dropped my camera at the show in Vegas. And I was like, "Oh my God, these guys figured it out 40 years ago, right? KISS figured this out 40 years ago." And bear with me. What you have here is the perfect marketing team. You have four unique individuals on stage, each with their own individual unique role, right? But they're synced together beautifully to deliver an experience, the experience of the song. So why can't you map your marketing team sort of in the same way to deliver the product, the experience, whatever that may be? And so, you know, I always think of like the drums representing SEO, laying the backbeat of the band, you know, the foundation of your strategy. The Paul Stanley, the vocalist of KISS, could be, he's the singer, right, of the band. He's the front man of the band, so he represents social, which could be the voice and tone of your marketing team. Gene's, he's the core member of the band, writes the best songs, sings the songs that Paul can't sing. Paul's voice is too damn high in many cases, but he's the content engine of the band. And then you have Ace Frehley or Bruce Kulick or Tommy Thayer, if you want to be up to date, filling in, tying it all together with a sweet guitar solo called Demand Gen. Or market automation acquisition, whatever you want to call that for the B2C folks. But you know, all those four people sync together on stage perfectly. That's how your marketing team should sit. And it's interesting to me that the startup world, they're growing into this, right? Because they're building their desks together. So SEO has to sit with content, PR has to sit with social, and demand gen has to sit with, because they have no other choice. But the bigger organizations, the bigger the silos, the bigger the problems. They're kind of suffering to get back to this. So I think it's interesting to see the startups do that. And then you have PR, which is Doc McGee, who goes on tour with KISS. When I saw him, he was backstage with him. He wasn't in the ivory tower in New York City, like barking orders down, like he knew what was happening on the streets. He was embedded with the band, PR sitting together with content, social, et cetera. And then, and most importantly, the analogy comes together with the KISS Army, which is the community. Which, if you don't have someone to advocate, you know, share, celebrate your brand and your success and your product, then you really have nothing. So KISS figured this out 40 years ago. There you go. Marketing team of the future, as demonstrated by KISS.
Jason, I don't think I've heard any more poetic delivery of analogies. I mean, my God, I just dropped the mic now. That is fantastic.
I think the KISS Army started here in Indiana, too, if I remember correct.
Is that right? Because I am a card-carrying member of the KISS Army for 30 years. I'll tell you what, that whole scenario hit me in like 90 seconds. I was like, oh, my God, this is it.
And then divine inspiration.
You had to. Oh, my gosh. We are going to have to put that on a lanyard and foist it up for you, man. This is going to be fan. We got to build an infographic around that. Have to.
What's really funny is like every time I presented that at a couple conferences, And every time someone would tweet to Gene or Paul, one of the slides, because I have this whole slide, it's like, you know, it has all their faces and there's lightning and flames that pull it all together mm-hmm. and orchestrate it. And every time, like, Gene or Kiss Online would retweet it, and I'd be like the number one guy at the conference every time. Most tweeted at the conference.
That is fantastic. Oh, well, we certainly appreciate you laying that down, and we got full video and audio for this. So we got to start do the clarion call for the Kiss Army being the content marketing solution. Hey, that's fantastic. You're a fountain of knowledge, Jason, and it is fantastic talking to you. I do want to ask you what really bugs you. We've kind of covered a lot of it today, but what really bugs you in your industry today?
I am a fountain of something. I wouldn't call it knowledge all the time. Anyway, again, I think I touched on it just a little bit. What really bothers me is just, you know, marketers like personal branding. I'm the first person to tell you personal branding is super important, right? How do you differentiate yourself from the marketer next to you? I mean, I wouldn't be here today if it wasn't for relationships, networking, and my own personal brand. But I don't lead with my personal brand. I lead with whatever the mission of the company that I'm working for is, right? So I see a lot of people leading with their personal brand, mm-hmm. and that never works, because then it turns into it's all about you. And the one thing I've learned over the past couple of years is it's not about me. It's about my team. It's about delivering results. It's about helping sales be more successful, about helping the business and the bottom line grow. And I think, you know, social, it's a double-edged sword, because a lot of us go down the wrong path and they think that, oh, I want to be this thought leader, so it's all about me. And I found that over the past couple of years, and, you know, sometimes I don't really post on social too much as I used to. And it's how do I say this in a nice way? If you just take a step back and you lift up the people around you, you'll find out that you'll grow as a marketer and a leader very much more quicker. And if they rise, then you rise together. And it's much more fulfilling to see your personal brand grow through helping others than it is to try to go down this road of look at me, I'm the smartest one in the room. I've never been the smartest one in the room. That's how I continue to grow, and I never will be the smartest room. I don't want to be. So I think it's just a dangerous time with a lot of people who might make the wrong choice and think it is about them in any role, instead of focusing on the people around them and making sure that you are going to need people and relationships in your network later on. So please embrace them.
Yeah, you may think you won't, but you better believe you're going to need that. And it's not just, I mean, there is such a stardom focus that goes on inside of social media, and there's going to be a pendulum swing, right?
There has to be, you know, and it's like people like there's a great video right now going around from Seth Godin, where he talks about all the gurus coming out right now and the people like us. I'm getting retargeted with some YouTube ad right now with somebody who invented a term called viral hacking. I'm like, what the hell is viral hacking? He promised me that I can get $60,000 worth of leads in the next 2 hours, whatever. But I got to sign this course and click over here, and it's a really terribly produced video with a selfie. And I'm like, but I fear that there's people that are taking advantage of people out there who don't know any better. Yeah. And it's really scary, and I wish there was a way to sort of filter through the snake oil salesman out there. Now, I'm not saying that all of them are, but I'm saying that it's a dangerous time if you want to learn something to figure out is that a trusted source or not. I think that's really, really dangerous. And it's interesting to me that I spend quite a bit of time on LinkedIn. It is a plug for LinkedIn that, you know, is a trusted platform, and we take pride in the fact that we have, you know, editors and the algorithm working together. And so, it's just, that's what really bothers me. I think, it's the ego. It's the folks who are trying to sell you something, sell you a fast solution that we know is not feasible. If it sounds too good to be true, obviously it is. We haven't learned that yet. I think if you look at folks like, you know, Scott Stratton out there in the world and the Seth Godins, I think there's the trusted folks. And then you see the folks who build their brand authentically and take the time, and they're not in a rush. And those are the people that I trust. There's some great people doing some cool stuff, but sometimes it's hard to find them, you know?
Yeah, I do. Well said. Conversely, what excites you about your industry right now?
What excites me? video. I mean, not just a talking head video, but actually making like small little productions and you know, taking you know, editing. I always say that editing is storytelling, and I love editing video, but it takes so much time to do it well. But I'm really excited to see everyone is, you know, it used to be everyone's a content creator, but now everyone's a video producer. And it's interesting to me. It's really exciting to see. I think maybe the video story in B2B or the video story might be a little bit overplayed or maybe a little bit of a conversation that's late to talk about. But what does video look like on LinkedIn? That's something no one knows. We're still getting the numbers in from our customers and our prospects and our members. But it's exciting to see video really become such a cool thing on LinkedIn and where it's going to go. So that's what gets me excited. But I love seeing really well done little mini documentaries. Like I love taking blog posts that do really well because I'm still a writer and a reader, right? So I'm a text guy at heart, but I love taking the good ones and turning them into like little 3-minute documentaries, but going over the top with music and production and B-roll and you know, not just the talking head, but just going, seeing how far you can push the creativity and you know, with all the cool, I have like 7 cameras in my desk. And, I'm crazy about this stuff right now.
Well, so you can really see the artist's passion at that point in time, especially with such a small time period to deliver. You know, and on top of that, utilizing video marketing, you have to get your content hooking as quickly as possible, and it's got to pass the sniff test first and foremost. But you can see some incredible. I mean, the environment has allowed us to really just allow anybody to come through the woodwork and not go through the traditional channels and traditional training channels of video production. I mean, there's some quality that is just astounding all the time, just like you're saying.
I think the biggest opportunity though is to obviously experiment. I'm the first one to tell you to experiment, and it's cool to see so many people experimenting with video on LinkedIn. But at the same time, how can you, you know, push beyond sort of a talking head and do you have to, you know, I think the other thing that concerns me a little bit, I shouldn't say concerns me, but the other thing that I look for is video the right medium for your message, right? Just because you can create video, is that message better tailored for text, for a blog post? So don't discount the blog, man. The blog is still the most powerful piece of you know, our artillery in your content.
Don't diss the blog, man.
Don't diss the blog. Anyway, but I think it's just a matter of like, just because you can create content every day doesn't mean you should. Wait till you make sure it's done the best it can be. And sure, there's a moment for it on the fly. And I see some cool stuff all the time. The other day, I just shared something on LinkedIn today. I was at B2B Ignite, which is a conference here in London. And there was a woman who was speaking there. And afterwards, she sat down right at the end of the conference. You could see them tearing down the conference center. And she just put her phone up and she goes, she got her notes. She goes, "These are my takeaways. It was simple. It's to the point. It was honest. It was sincere. It was cool. It was in the moment." And yeah, it was, you know, how do you recap something that just happened? Well, you do it right there. You don't go home and write about it. I mean, we'll do that as well, but
right.
Have something to show on your video. And I think we just want to jump in the video and start pushing the button, and it's great. But the invisible hand of good content will hopefully help us good stuff rise to the top.
We will heal ourselves with quality content. Well, Jason, I appreciate your time today. I got to ask one thing, especially since we do streaming. Is LinkedIn going to give us streaming video?
That is a product question, and I am not at liberty to speak about that. But certainly, if you follow up with me offline, I can.
All right. So we're gonna have a conversation after this. I gotta know, man. I gotta know.
Product team sits right across from me, and they are very, very smart marketers. So
you can clue me in here. Are they shaking their heads yes or no? I mean, they're right there. All right. Hey, finally, a fun fact that we asked you to provide us. You've shot over 1,000 bands in the last 5 years and documented the entire process from never picking up a camera to becoming a professional in a book that was funded and released through Kickstarter. What is this book, man?
So, when I left the music industry, I'll try to make this as quick as possible. When I left the music industry, I still wanted to keep my ties to getting free concert tickets and free music. I don't really care about that anymore, but it was, at the time, I was young and I needed it, right?
Yeah.
I still love music. I still buy a lot of music. late in the day, man, that's just slipped out. But I was writing for this weekly newspaper while I was going back to school. And after I quit the music industry, and Motley Crue's publicist reached out to me and said, "Hey, do you want to cover this show?" I said, "Absolutely." So they said, "We'll give you a photo pass." This is 2011, I think. I'm like, "I don't even know what the hell that means." She goes, "Oh, you can photograph the band, the first three songs." And I said, "I've never even picked up a camera." So we went out, bought a camera, stayed up all night trying to figure out how to use it. The first shot I ever took is the opening of the book, and it says, "How could I F this up so bad?" I felt so bad that I messed up that opportunity that I vowed to master low light photography. And so I documented the process because it's a disrupted industry. Nobody wants to tell you anything. Nobody wants to help you. Huh. So I had to learn everything myself, and I documented everything, the settings, the gear, everything. And I took 1.2 million photos in 5 years, got it down to 175 for the book, from, Roger Waters to Metallica.
Man.
Player, I mean, you name it, to the dirtiest clubs and all around the world. And it's funny because I would go into to do a keynote somewhere, and I would always fly in a day or two early everywhere I went, and I would go shoot a couple of shows, and then I'd go through the photos and write the article and then put them in the book. And I have 15 4-terabyte hard drives, jam-packed. But the book, I put the book out as the story. It's called Down in Front, story from the back of the crowd to the front of the stage. I just shot four bands last week. I still shoot all the time. I put the book out on Kickstarter. Wasn't even sure what was going to happen. We got fully funded, went to like 3,000% funded in 30 days. Did a run of 500 copies, sold a few. Was still almost sold out. I have a few left. And that's it, man. But I just wanted to see if I could do it. Wow. Hardbound. It was a beast of a project,
offline. I got to buy a copy from you, man. That sounds incredible. And I mean, just with the 1.7 million photos, how in the world you could boil it down to 175 photos, man, that's excruciating just to think about.
It took 2.5 years to make the book.
Wow.
And literally I went through every one of those photos. I edited them myself. I re-edited them. It was insane. But it's a story of reinvention, but it's also a story of, if you want to do this, mm-hmm. here's how you do it. Anyone can do this.
You got to put the discipline to it. That's what you got to do. So rockandrollcocktail.com, and certainly jump in there and grab up Down in Front, story from the back of the crowd to the front of the stage. That's fantastic. Anything else that we can promote for you today?
I don't want to cannibalize your podcast, but you guys are much bigger than my podcast. But the Sophisticated Market Podcast Season 7 launches in just a couple of weeks.
Yep.
And kicking off it, so I did something a little bit differently. I think I'm the first B2B podcast in the history of podcasts to have a musical guest on. And so the debut episode, we don't really do video for the podcast, but the first episode, we did a live performance with this singer-songwriter. It's called Storytelling Lessons from a Singer-Songwriter, and this beautiful, amazing singer-songwriter, Anna Pancaldi, who I saw open for Hoover Phonic here, was nice enough to come by and play a few songs and tell us how she approaches storytelling. Songwriters have 3 minutes to tell a story, and marketers struggle to tell a story in an hour and a half, right? So I figured, why not get some tips and why not get some entertainment along the way? And it turned out to be a really cool thing. And we're kicking off season 7. And my love for music is tied into everything I do. And sort of worked out. So I'm excited to see if that fails completely or if it takes off.
Well, dude, you're on season 7. So, I mean, it's a labor of love, but you got to have some metrics behind you. You're doing some good stuff, right?
Yeah, we're doing all right. We crossed about 150,000 downloads, but it's a one-man show, right?
Yeah.
So, I do everything myself and take breaks because I start to get just so much. You guys know what it's like. And we were talking about this earlier before we came on, like how much work goes into a podcast. This is not easy.
No.
Sourcing the guests, doing your research, coming up with the questions, tying it back to being relevant. I think what you guys do, I think is incredible. And you guys take it to a whole new level.
Oh, man, thank you so much. Well, if you can ever bring KISS into the conversation, you know you've got a stellar podcast, right?
You got it.
Well, thank you so much for your time. I appreciate your compliments, sir. We really do appreciate that type of contribution back. To all of our listeners, you want to follow Jason Miller on Twitter at Jason Miller CA, on Facebook, Jason Miller CA, on LinkedIn, JSN Miller, as well as Instagram, Jason Miller CA. Hey, we've gone through the gamut of a lot of insight today, but Jason, I want to give one final thought to the digital marketers out there. What can you drop on them?
I would say slow down, take your time, don't be in a rush, do something cool, do something relevant, do something that's going to help someone else, and focus on the creative element, how it's going to break through, and extract every ounce of value out of every piece of content that you produce, and then just figure out how to measure it back and prove some results. I think we've come a long way in content marketing. Sometimes I think we forget how to push the idea forward, but plenty of stuff to keep us busy, plenty of topics out there. And just take a deep breath, do something cool.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much, Jason. We really enjoy the conversation. We're going to certainly lift you up from afar here in Indy. If you ever traipse through our backyard, man, we'd love to take you out to dinner and talk. It's been fantastic.
I will take you up on that. Gentlemen, thank you so much.
You're more than welcome. All right. Thanks for listening to Edge of the Web Radio. And a special thank you to our guest here, Jason Miller. Thanks to all the colleagues at Site Strategics. Appreciate it, Tom. Your work is fantastic on a regular basis. Be sure to check out all the must-see videos over at edgeofthewebradio.com, as well as all the insider information as well. Tom, who do we have coming up next week? Actually, Thursday.
Thursday's to be determined.
We love to be determined.
They're great guests.
They are great guests. They got incredible followers. So check in on our regular time, 3 p.m. Thursday Eastern, and see who we're going to be talking to this week. All right, from all of us at Site Strategics and Edge, thanks so much, and do not be a piece of cyber driftwood. We'll talk to you next week.